Austin, Head Provincial Strategic Management.
Good morning, Chair and Members. Michael Edgerton, EDG for People Management.
Good morning, Heather Schluter, Legal Services.
Good morning, Bill Arlington, Centre for Liberation.
Good morning, Gillian Eshaw, Deputy Manager of Information.
Good morning, Fire Stan, Corporate Communication.
Good morning, Paul Feldenay, Coffee Dispatch. Good morning, Robert Shaw, Office of the
Thank you, colleagues. And a vacancy for the record if you need yourself. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Tashi Miller from the Parliament Marketing Group.
Good morning, Nikki Van Beck, Treasury.
Thank you. Colleagues, as you know, we're dealing with the one this morning, the Department of the Premier. If you would have received the strategic plan and also the annual performance plan of the department. So when we deal with the report, after the previous main input, then we deal with the actual vote itself, but you can also ask questions on the actual performance plan, so we don't do each report one page by one page, because all the questions will be related to the annual performance plan in any case. So it's just easier to deal with it that way. And you can refer to the page number so that the officials in the committee can go to the relevant page number, and then it's just a general question, and you're welcome to state it as such. Welcome, Honourable Member Peter Marais, joining us this morning in this committee. Can you just introduce yourself for the record, so we know that you're present?
The comrade Peter Marais.
you, Jay. I thought I might just give you a little bit of context about what we're doing in this world. And you also connected to what Cecilia has indicated. And I have handed out a one page on all the members of CIDA, because that more or less sets out the role and responsibilities of this one. So we're not just merely responsible for administering a department, but we're responsible overall to make sure that the rest of the government actually delivers. So if you think this is giving effect, this is what we've got jointly for the entities, and all of that is obviously set out in the provincial strategic plan, with each department having their own plan. So this is a diagram of this chair. I mean, it captures where we want to go as a collective. Obviously, under the big vision of making this province a safe province where everyone prospers. And in fact, this department finds its role within GIP5 called Innovation and Culture, but more specifically also being responsible to make sure that safety faces communities, growth in jobs, empowering people, as well as mobility, and all of that is pulled together so that the entire system actually functions. So I want to connect to what Ophelia has indicated. Our number one priority is towards the citizen. And in fact, if you look at the five key areas on the right-hand side under innovation and culture, you will see having a citizen-centric culture is the number one focus of this vote. And obviously all of that happens within the space of becoming more innovative, but innovation for impact. And by that we're not meaning, you know, the theory piece of innovation just sits within tech. In fact, we also believe that innovation sits in processes. It also sits in the various connections that we can hold locally, nationally, as well as internationally. And then focus area 3 deals with integrated service delivery. Governance transformation is area number 4. And then key around our innovation and culture sits talent and staff development. And we've got more than 82,000 people that needs to take care of the 6-7 million of people in the province. Most of them obviously sit within education and within the health space, and also within the social space. So it becomes important that we make sure that our staff, you know, has the required talent, and then obviously that we, you know, do what we need to do to make sure, you know, that staff development actually takes place. So Chair, within that context, this department is from an institutional perspective, we are set up, you know, through 5 programs. Obviously, each of the programs contributing to innovation and culture on the drive, also contributing to delivering on the PhD. But we're not doing that alone. We also work hand-in-hand with the Department of Local Government, the Provincial Treasury, as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, but more the development planning outside in relation to integrated service delivery, and then also with some of our external partners, particularly as far as it relates to partnering, volume partnership, and making sure that the strategy around putting the entire society together actually lands. So when you listen to us today, and when you go to our PPP as well as our budget document, you need to understand that our focus is external, it's towards the citizen. And that's, I think, one of the fundamental shifts that we've agreed on as a management team that we want to focus on over the next year, and in fact, at least over the next 5 years. And it complements, I think, what you've seen within the PSP and what most of the departments will come and tell you as we go through the various budget hearings or the standing committee hearings, and also connects to what the Minister of Finance set up yesterday in the budget, being the first deliverable against the PSP that we take. So Chair, in summary, so that you can just understand what we are about, our total vote is about 1.6 billion to be sewer assumptions, as detailed for the risk management, etc., of the same boats that I've mentioned, and then also in relation to ICT, our split also runs across the entire Western Cape government space. So we need to make sure that we enable the other departments to do what they need to do. In fact, we need to ensure that we enable other departments to deliver on their own APPs and onto their own strategic plans. Chair, if you look at what we have in front of you, you will see that the major adjustments in this was comes primarily from program 2, and we check out the reasons for that, amongst other on page number 19, page 35, of our budget statement 2, in the document that's in front of you, and then the other major shifts also come particularly from people management side, given the fact that it's highly personnel driven, and then through program 5, the corporate assurance, mainly as a result of some of the initiatives that we actually got in that one. So here our document sets out exactly the allocation that we've received from Treasury, or that we approved by the provincial cabinet. Most of the funding that we've received is earmarked. So we cannot just do whatever we want to do. Within our major programs, particularly program 4, almost all the money is earmarked. All the new additional money that sits in program 2 that speaks to the 5 priority areas, as well as in program 5, all of that is earmarked, and we're under constant scrutiny from all the oversight institutions, being the Treasury, provincial cabinet, as well as provincial parliament. So the fact that it's earmarked means that we need to actually report in detail on exactly what it is that we need to do. But all of it needs to contribute to the APP as well as to the SP that we have already tabled within this book. And then Chair, maybe just also for your information, obviously part of the shift in the money is also a provision for the Children's Commissioner. That process currently sits within your area of responsibility, the Department of Commerce. But we want to provide you with the assurance that we have made 8 million available to deal with amongst other the staff components of the Children's Commissioner, accommodation requirements, and to make sure that it's properly set up. Obviously, this will also take responsibility to make sure that it is within this year, that process actually runs sufficiently, and I think we will treat the process as we proceed. We also make obviously provision for let's call it almost interim accommodation, not temporary, but permanent interim proper office accommodation. And once the commission is appointed and they have the view that they may need to move into another area, there will also be some scope to deal with some of those particular issues. So Chair, that's more or less what we deal with in this vote. And I think from the APP as well as the SP has been put together by the collective this year. There is all the program managers in this department, and we've given the commitment, and I've said that in our APP on page 5, that we are accountable to yourself, to the cabinet, but we are also accountable to the broader public to make sure that we implement, and we have committed ourselves to implement the APP plus, obviously make sure that the funds are spent in an effective as well as an efficient manner. So Chair, with that note, I hand back to you, and we are available to respond to the efficiencies that we may have.
Thank you for that presentation, the Premier and from the HOD. Members, before we continue with the report, can I just ask for questions? Member Moreira, so you hand it up.
Thank you, Chair. I have a big question. I would like to know what is your take on the decision by National Parliament to not stick to the agreement with NEDBANK about salaries. We are quite a huge salary. We were 2,000 people. How will it affect them? What preparations have been made in case this results in labour unrest in the Western Cape? Has any provision been made for this? Do you intend engaging with national government on this particular issue, or are you accepting it as a private company and we can't do anything about it? But I can see these storms on the horizon. I'd like to know about that. secondly, I want to say thank you that you have made now provision for the Children's Commissioner and that you also allocated 8 million rand for that. I would like to know a bit more about that, by when you think you will, this person will be appointed, and whether you intend reaching out to NGOs who could assist in this regard. Churches, lobbyists, that can help, because I'm really concerned about the number of street children that live on the street, that is a sort of the number of children grow up without a father in the home, with a single parent. And I think that when you do appoint this commissioner, children's commissioner, I'd like to know that all this will be part of the, shall I say, the duties and what we expect of the outcomes that we expect for that. That's one of the reasons.
Member Dutton.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much, Chair, thank you to the Premier and the DG for the introduction. Thank you also for sharing the focus areas for Vision Inspired Priority. I think, Chair, if I'm not mistaken, this was actually tabled as part of our discussion today.
Yeah,
that's correct. Okay. What I would just like to ask is, in regard to the safe and community, safe and cohesive community, I'm not sure whether this is a misprint or a mistake, but if you look at the third focus area under safe and cohesive communities, the one in the middle, it says reducing violence by and against youth and children. I notice that woman is not specifically mentioned there. And I'm trying to look at whether under any of the other focus areas, and so I presume that it was an oversight. Because I think when we're talking about violence against youth and children, I mean, that's obviously critical, but the whole country and our province in particular is affected, and I would urge that the issue of women is included there. And I think as you know, when the Premier presented the safety plan last year, we were also given the assurance that across the different votes that there would be, in terms of the two pillars that the plan is supposed to rest upon, the so-called boots on the ground, as well as the integrated strategies and medium to long-term strategy to reduce violence, that the issue of gender-based violence would be absolutely critical, and that different departments would need to play their role in that regard. So that's just the one thing I wanted to raise. And then the second issue, I mean, obviously, you know, the department, as was said by the DG and the Premier, that the whole, you know, innovation and culture priority seems to be, obviously, I don't think anyone's saying it shouldn't be the case at different departments, because I'm sure we'd like them all to have a culture change and to be innovative, but it kind of resides in this department. And in that regard, around innovation, after the budget was delivered yesterday, there was a discussion when the provincial minister and the head of the department presented around the budget process itself, which I think is an issue for serious thinking about innovation. Now, we know that the provincial constitution contains provisions for the issue of money bills and a procedure to actually impact and for the members themselves to be able to amend the money bill, which is primarily the issue of the budget. Because I think, and I'm not saying speaking for other members, but you know, the one of the issues that we are sitting here today, obviously dealing with the reality of the budget, but in terms of the process that was explained again to us yesterday, you know, from September and how the whole process goes through. The issue of first of all, participation in determining budget priorities. You know, obviously I know that the Department of the Premier, you have, you know, your own forums with mayors and MMs and all of that, but in terms of taking that further to actually have inputs and participation, the point that Member Maria has raised around the pressures that will result from the national budget around the expenditure on wages and the process, that the more I think one consults and engages with people, the better the chance of different sectors understanding the pressures that we're under and so on. So I just, from an innovation and culture point of view, I'm quite interested to hear what is the approach towards actually moving on legislation which will allow members to amend money for safety. Since we look at this and we hear from the DG that there's an, you know, an increase of literally just above inflation, but we might have an argument, and I'm not simply on CDI here, but say for instance we would want to say that we should delay a certain project rollout and, you know, and anyway make a change in the CDI component of the premium's vote. And then even the overall allocations to education, health and so on, you can only do that if you have a procedure to amend the money bill. And for me, I think that is part of the innovation that we need to look at. And I know it's not easy because there's such a pressurized program in any event to prepare a budget. But I would like to ask if there could be some kind of a commitment to from the Department of the Premier, obviously working with Treasury, to really move on the issue of the process of consulting around the budget, and then, you know, moving, you know, obviously talking with National on the issue of amending money bills. That was the second issue. And then, if the Premier could just give us an update on the environmental commissioner. I know there has been correspondence set out, and we also happy that there's an MTF allocation towards the Children's Commissioner, but obviously at some point the executive has to make a decision. Is one going to go ahead with trying to amend the provincial constitution so that, you know, the commissioner, as I understand the proposal from MEC Bedell's department, is not is discretionary as opposed to, you know, so I think we need to resolve this matter at one level or another, so that as we begin, like we did with the Children's Commissioner, you know, to hearings, and it is, you know, from my point of view, a provision that founders of the Western Cape Constitution inserted for particular reasons. I know there are arguments around other legislation which has happened in the meantime, but I think we cannot carry on with a situation where so many years after the drafters of the constitution, which is now, as we all know, certified by the court, still has a provision which is obligatory but it doesn't exist. So I just wanted to know from the Premier's side what is the thinking as for the time frame rather when any decision, whatever decision is going to be made. And then the next one is just on the safety issue. Obviously there is going to be a specific discussion on that vote, but clearly it is, as I understand, the number one priority, the issue of safe and cohesive communities. And we, in the discussion that we had yesterday with the Treasury and the Provincial Minister of Finance, we, and in the speech itself, we were looking for clear examples that the second pillar was actually being funded. And all we really got was that all the spending in that, and I think, you know, we just checked the figure now in the blue book, but that 1.4 million, I think it was just under one, because I think they said the first year, you know, had been included, that all of that was all, that was the answer we got yesterday, was all going to law enforcement officers. So I think the problem that we have is twofold. Number one, we don't yet see how the second pillar of reducing violence is, one, being included in each particular vote in monetary terms. And then the second issue is that, and the head of Treasury did respond to that, where we said, you know, there are, I don't know if there are 10, although I saw some documents, there might be you know, is, and I would say that if you have the data to manage it, you could also, you know, engage with your colleagues at National and say, in Khayelitsha, does the South African police have any plans to build? Does any, you know, we've got FET colleges being built in Mitchell Strand, for instance, so that you could actually map and say, from the provinces side, we are spending X in these 10 areas, this is where we're spending it, we are aware that the national departments are spending so much in this area, and even the city of Cape Town, for instance. So we're not seeing that, we're not seeing a specific allocation of resources into those most affected areas, and almost then, yeah, and then just into again, in terms of the issue of innovation, we didn't hear anything from the minister yesterday in regard to our approach towards own revenue. I know when the comeback kid, Honourable Marais, was the premier for a, in fact, a very short period, but quite a historic period, if I may say so myself. It was the beginnings of a debate around looking at all sorts of alternative revenue. Obviously, we have the casino, the gambling, there's the provincial motor licenses. There were various other discussions beginning. Now, on the issue of motor vehicle licenses, you know, for instance, the possibility of a you know, sliding scale. It was my understanding at the moment that when we increase, we simply increase according to the size of things. Engine size. But if you, for instance, say that a bigger engine size causes more wear and tear on our roads, that the increase of those could be slightly higher, and if we look at, you know, that funding for, you know, building more roads, employing more law enforcement officers, etc. So I just wanted to check, is there any thinking in the Department of the Premier from an innovation point of view around own revenue, not just motor vehicle licenses, but any other stuff? Because I think, as we all are aware, the country and the province does face constraints. And I've also noticed in the Department of the Premier votes that when it comes to PPPs, there's not a single one. Although when I looked at in the education, the list of schools, there's one school there which is mentioned as a donor school. We can check which one that is. So presumably the Department of the Premier doesn't have to declare a budget book that there's a PPP in education, or do you? Is it just that it's your own PPP as the Department of the Premier? But given the role of the Department of the Premier and the point that's been made here about revenue, and generating resources, I mean, you could argue that collaboration schools at some level is getting money in, but just somewhere where there's like a reflection on what are we doing either to increase revenue from the legal ways that we could, plus donor funding, and the fact that there's not much at all from the Department of Economy is a concern to me. Those are just the points.
Thank you. If I can just respond to two issues, because we are sitting, the Children's Commissioner, that process is currently with the Standing Committee of the Children, and we have recommended a candidate which will come before this Parliament to recommend the agreement, so I know it's currently sitting with us at the Standing Committee. The issue of the budget and the Rules Committee, we have as a budget committee made a recommendation to the Rules Committee on the changing of the budget. So the Rules Committee is currently looking at the process for changing the budget. I think yesterday when you led the meeting, that response was given by the chairperson of the budget committee, because we met with the end of last year, we did discuss the matter. So the two issues of the Children's Commission. I think what the department gets to help us is in terms of the office space and those sort of administrative issues, but in terms of the Children's Commission itself, we have recommended a candidate which I know will be announced in the forthcoming weeks quite soon. And if possible, I wouldn't want to discuss the candidate because we did make a decision in committee. And until such time as the candidate's name is in progress, we will discuss that candidate. And I would like to, because some other people have applied and they might not receive feedback. Really good feedback this one.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe one other word on the process, and I think that's something that we have to look at. It would be a nice process to, I know I've asked within government, but I think we should look at it from a standing committee point of view. Let's not use the Children's Commission, the same thing will apply. Let's use the Liquor Board, or let's use Cape Mansion. So, for example, the Liquor Board goes through the same process. So what the standing committee does is they advertise, they then go through an interview process. person that they appointed through their process that this part of the house was contracted. And I think there's a legal blur in there, and I think that would be a good discussion to have as legislators, as standing committees, to say, how does that actually work? Well, once you pass that ball over to the other side, then your job is done, but how do you hold that person who's actually appointed that person? So I think it's a question that we need to ask. But thank you very much for those initial questions. I think the first question around the wage bill, it is something that the DG and we noticed on day one that something is going to crash here. And it is a big question for us as a province. It's also a big question for us as South Africa. And every single day that question is getting worse. Not only because of the pressure that we need to put on our wage system, because, you know, it's an interesting question. Everybody says it. It doesn't matter whether you're the president that doubles. We all say, no, our wage bill is running away with us. We make the right statements, but then we get held to ransom. But if we overlay the pressure that we're facing as a country from a wage bill point of view, and then you overlay that on our slow economic growth, you add energy shortfalls, and now you add what we've seen in the north, the coronavirus impact, where whole countries are actually closing down. I saw yesterday that you actually are repaying your mortgage in Italy at the moment. You stand sure the government has to bail that out. We are globally under serious pressure, and within this country we've also got our own levels of serious pressure. So I mean, it's a very, very valid question. It is something that we are grappling with, and I'm sure the DG will add to it. But it's how we deal with it within the province, not only in governments, but I think across the province. It's going to be a big issue for business as well. And businesses are also putting under more and more pressure. So it's a very valid question. It's a question that I don't have all the answers to, but it's a question about process. It's a question that links to our strategic objective 5 or the other 5, where we say that it's about culture of an organisation. And culture of an organisation, we've got to talk. We've got to sit around the table. We've got to talk. We've got to find ways that we actually pull through this together. So I absolutely agree with you. The point on the Children's Commissioner, I mean, we can appoint that commissioner from the 1st of April because that's when the budget comes available. So as soon as the process comes through, we can then immediately, from the 1st of April, actually start to put that budget in place. The third question, the DG will also speak about that, but, you know, obviously there are lots of things. There's only a couple of highlighted issues here on this document, but, I mean, every single department is involved in the safety plan, and of course GBV is right up there. Already one minister is assigned as responsible for GBV across government. We've already had a look at this expenditure across government, and also the program that we've had. It's not just only putting programs in today, we've got programs that have been in place for a while measuring those programs. I've asked the minister to actually go and have a look at the effectiveness of those programs, because we deal with it every single day, where you see enough the gender-based violence and it's prolific. So you say to yourself, we've got these programs. If we didn't have these programs, would it be way worse? And then what else do we need to do? Or are these programs perhaps not working, and what else are we going to be doing? I mean, the same point about innovation and doing things differently. We have to then ask ourselves those tough questions. And so most definitely, budget process, it's also a good question. And again, a question about what process is there between Parliament and Executive. I mean, as you said, the Treasury explained the rigorous process that we go through in this province, and how that budget process, from what was happening last year to this year, to eventually finally making decisions. And of course, at the end of the day, it is the Executive and the departments that end up coming up with that budget, and then it comes here for the oversight. But that's been a question of whether that can be changed. At the moment, not. But what I do want to add is that the process that we followed with South Africa going into a district model, district approach, in this process, the mayors of the districts
commissioner, we're going to take that 8 million rand and we're going to give it to a school. What are the consequences then, because then the legislature must stand for that decision made versus the executive and the oversight. So I mean, these are complex questions. And I think we're all learning because the world changes every single day. But that's also a very interesting topic to say, let's put a team together and actually have a look at it. What is it? How does it work? I have actually seen once in my 20 years here a budget change. It was changed in vote 2. And it was a catering decision that was changed during the debate, which is quite interesting in budget. But I mean, that's trivializing this question. It's, you know, how do you make major changes? Because there are major pressures. And of course, everybody here represents the citizens of this problem. But then we need to put some brains together to say, how do we actually influence a national piece of legislation and processes? And I'm very lucky to be part of or enabling that kind of discussion. The question around the environmental commissioner, the Honourable Doug will know that we and I had a meeting on it. I'm actually waiting for a formal response from what the position is, because obviously when the constitution was put together 25 years ago, it was a different environment to what we find right now. The argument is that we have a whole lot more layers of legislation. So would this be effective, taking the money away from perhaps building another school every year to put into this? Is there sufficient legislation in place, yes or no? And but I noticed from the speech in the opening address that it doesn't sound like the anti-monty budget. So, well then, of course, this needs a constitutional change. You need a whole of this parliament to make that choice. Then we have to say, well, fine, well, then let's budget for it. But I also do want to get to the point where we say, let's make a decision, and let's not carry on through many administrations and guises of administration in the last while. We need to get to a stage where both this parliament and this government make a decision on it. And so I agree with you, but I'm also happy to continue with those conversations. Number six. Also, the safety plan and how it lands on the ground. And I must say that, you know, obviously, also this thing is iterative, it changes, it moves as you go, but quite frankly, we can straight away say to you that the first round of boots on the ground, you know exactly the area that they're in, we can GIS map them, the VNAC team can do that quite easily, right down to our existing, when I look at VNAC, every time I look at that, I think, yeah, someone can actually know. So every single person that works in the government works, because she shows the GIS map, not named, but with an X to say that's a provincial government employee. And it was interesting because we were doing an exercise in Hanover Park on crime and how do we deal with crime and do we have a contact on that street? And we actually have someone who works on that street. So we've got, but it's about how we bring the data together, and I agree on this, how do we bring the data together and report on it. So that you can see that the first 500 boots or sets of boots that have been deployed to Kali, to South Sea, to Delft, to Philippi and to Hanover Park, who's where? And of course what we want to do for our, and I say this once because it's not in place yet, because we're still putting that together. What we want to do is to be able to determine when and where. So using data to say that don't go to work on a Monday morning at 8, you need to be there on a Thursday night. And on a Friday night, right to until 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's when you're going to make the biggest impact and the biggest difference. So we're still building it, but we will be able to report it as you go, as to where each deployment happens. And of course, you also want to do it in such a way that you're doing it because you want to manage it and measure it, but we're not doing it because it's going to become the legislature, the early warning system to the gangsters, because we're coming up that we're deploying next week, because you have the GIS map. The data system. But hopefully it reverts the other way around and we can come back and report that this has been a success. But of course we need to manage that across everything, whether it's school fences, or whether it's 1,000 days, or whether it's where do the expanded Christmas program, where does drawing its youngsters from? And are those people who are now innovation, and especially around home revenue, it's something that does bother me immensely, and maybe even more than home revenue, is our revenue model, specifically at local governments. Our local governments are really, really in trouble because our revenue model is under huge pressure. We have got energy shortfalls. We have got to try and replace that. Water costs, energy costs are going up all the time. Our demand on free water, free energy versus our ability to get people out of poverty into middle class so we can actually pay, it's becoming a big issue at local government, and we need to understand that model, and then again also at the provincial government level, what are the other mechanisms for home revenue, and how do we do it differently? So for example, how do we look at our license disc on the Windstream model, which is I think still about 1.3, 1.4 billion income. It costs us a lot of money to bring that money in. I remember doing the red tape stuff on liquor licenses. They said you do a yearly liquor license, the income is X and it costs you Y. Why don't you do a license that lasts for 2 years? Because you then have double the income with a single management cost. So I think pretty basic. But maybe we need to start looking at those kind of things around how do we get the money. And what's the reason of that round disc on your windscreen versus a number plate all linked to the same thing? Are we able to maybe even do away with that and actually, you know, collect the money in a different way for me? We've done a lot of work, I won't even mention the word already, but we've done a lot of work there, and then we did a lot of work in the middle of change at national level, and you can't come and, you know, do a double taxation. But it is definitely something that I think exercises our mind, but mainly Treasury's mind, on a daily basis. And then my last point around PPPs. And I think this is another area that we actually have a lot of work to do. Because quite frankly, when you mention the word PPP in South Africa, the business side of the partnership are generally not comfortable. I remember first coming into the government, we had PPP and Treasury. Treasury at a national level said, please, you've got to make this thing work, and that was redoing the PPP on Chapman's Peak, because it was critical, and I absolutely agree, we've got to find better ways of getting PPPs to work, especially in this environment, and looking at new ways of revenue and partnerships. We've got to look at the mechanism of PPP, because it's laborious, it's difficult, and it chases investors away. And that's why private sector come with these new models. The Jack's Carroll School is the perfect PPP. But it doesn't go through proper PPP treasury approved processes. It's a different partnership that private sector driven and private sector run, and even what's come across as our we come in, they're not saying you come to an asset, they're saying you come along and do an asset. And so I agree, we've got to, as a country, we've got to look at our regulatory environment and our processes around PPPs because they are restrictive at the moment.
Chair, let me just add one or two things. I think Clemens responded to most of the stuff. To remember my hair more particularly, I think the reality that as a country we out. I'm talking about our fiscal year. And I just made a major point yesterday. I mean, if you do a quick back of the matchbox exercise, I mean, at the moment, and if you look at even our own budget document, we provided for a maximum of 8.1%. Increase that includes a 2% annual adjustment that people normally get through notches. So if you just take CPI and the fact that we're not even growing at 2%, we're growing at less than 1%, it already indicates you that we're not generating sufficient tax revenue just to cover the people that's currently in the system. Added to that is obviously people being added to the system almost on a daily basis. And I think the biggest problem that we have is that the increases that we see in salaries way above inflation doesn't go hand in hand with increases in efficiency or productivity. So that by itself creates a major issue. And that's why the National Minister put the proposal on the table to cut the wage bill by about 160 billion. In fact, that proposal is to save South Africa. If we're not going to commit to that, we're going to see ourselves going further down into this black hole that we're not going to be able to get ourselves is the public sector wage law, we're not going to get out of this. The money needs to go into the investment part of the equation that deals with, when you think about GDP, it's consumption plus government expenditure plus investment. So we need to get the part of the investment part, we need to get it up to make sure that we actually save So in relation to that, maybe just to satisfy the member, we have provided for increases in terms of the wage bill that is currently on the table. That we all know it's not very sustainable, but I mean, we are actually able to pay the people that's currently in the system. But we need to put a concerted effort on the table to get the message over. In fact, this department, together with the Treasury, is part of the central bargaining, negotiating team. So it's myself, it's the head official Treasury, and then obviously at political level, it's the Premier together with the Minister of Finance. And I think for now, we need to all work together to get a message over, not just to unions, but also to public service, to say what we have on the table is actually unaffordable for South Africa. Because soon we're going to get to a state where our debt runs away totally with us. I mean, there are some of our provincial colleagues, I think the Premier can attest to that, as a PCC, where the colleagues are talking about their salary budgets and actually weigh them way higher than 70% at the moment of their total budget. So if you pay 70% plus of your total budget on salary, it means that you don't have money for medicine, you don't have money for schools, you don't have money to transport people. You cannot do what you need to do when citizens really feel safe. Or you're going to have public servants safe, then they can't even go out to service delivery by points. And that, I think, is a messaging that is going to require all of us in this country to have a divine into that simple message. I think just on the issue of the safety discussion, Member Duckman also shared with yourself, we have we received an invitation from Parliament, so the 8th of April we will be back at this committee to again give you an update on the work that we've done on the safety plan. And what we will see in this round is not just a focus on the law enforcement part, because the first iteration was really to give you a detail on the plan itself, but we will be able to give you a little bit more detail on what we're doing on the preventive side. So the previous spoke about this, three issues. We look at Christmas, we look at the first time they say, look at school safety, all those things, all the exits in the budgets. Okay? What we now need to do is to pull them out and to actually come to this committee and to say, we're spending X amount on enforcement together with the city, but as a provincial government, we're spending X amount on the preventative stuff. And then we actually want to take it a step further. So we also want to go now to municipalities and say, City of Cape Town, as an example, Drakenstein, Swellendam, in some of these key, the 10, 11 key areas, what is it that you're doing from a preventive side? And then also to the point that Minister or Member Maria is made, is to what extent do we pull in civil society into that discussion? Because government programs on their own is not going to change the landscape around. Communities need to take also responsibility for it. As a government, we need to enable them and we need to help them. So if you look at the entire safety plan, it's a collective effort between national government, provincial government, municipal government, and the communities out there, because we need to take responsibility for our own communities and actually to take to actually shift it. So there is a concerted effort internally to start to look at the second pillar of the plan. Just lastly, Chair, on gender, I mean, we are serious about gender. In fact, myself and the Premier had a probably I think it was about 3 hour discussion with the gender commissioner nationally that came to visit us, plus the provincial representative, on the commentary that they sent us on our PSP. So we've made the PSP public and we've received extensive commentary. I think it was like 31 or 33 points from the gender commission on how our plan needs to be adjusted to make provision for issues around gender. We then did most of the amendments. In fact, our plans actually mainstream, the budget also mainstream gender issues. But then in addition to that, we actually met with them and we had probably one of the best discussions ever. We also commented on And in fact, we're also having a discussion tonight national with the Forum for South African on this Director General to actually make sure that all these plans actually are land. So we're working hand in hand, Member Dato, with the National Department of Human, of Women, Youth and Disabilities to make sure that all these things actually land in our bus. In fact, Peter spoke about Minister Fernandez, that's taken the key responsibility. And I think one of the key announcements is that we're not only going to look at gender-based violence in the first 10 days of December, we're just starting off the little programs. Everything that we do, we're going to start to institutionalize these things within government. And these things need to be delivered not just by the Department of Social Development and Health, but it must actually be mainstream within all the respective departments. And chair, by the last point on innovation within the own revenue space. If you look at our document, you will see that we going to our plan is to fundamentally start to look different at our international relations component. In fact, if there's one area that I think that we've kind of not paid a lot of attention to over the last month, is the issue around accessing donor funding and additional kind of support, particularly from international institutions. So particularly in the new year, we're going to put a proper strategy together that we're going to drive together with our public entities, and the main aim is to get additional support from particularly our international institutions to strengthen the relationships with the national government, particularly from an IR perspective, also with municipalities, and to strengthen the partnership relationship also with communities. But there are also other funding available locally, particularly money being spent by major institutions through the CSI commitments and the government. I do not believe that we adequately looking at those issues. So those are some of the issues around on venue and venue broadly to actually make sure that we stretch on the bus that we currently have and make a much bigger impact on the citizens.
Chair, if I can make just add one other point here. I think on the international, it reminded me that we have and we need to grow that a lot. I mean, from a safety plan, we've already got the German Bavarian government who have offered us help around our investigations. And we are also pretty close now signing the MOU between the National Minister and myself on releasing around the investigations. But we, if you remember when we announced, this shows you that how the plan changes as it goes. When we announced the boots, and we said we're going to put investigators, 50 investigators for every 1,000 officers, men and women that we put on the ground. And we started working on this process. You get to a stage where you say, okay, how are we going to do this? Now we have this MOU between the chair and myself. And while this is happening, the CADMI case specifically highlighted both for national and for us the parole problem. We've also agreed, and you see in the budget, agreed that we're going to continue with it. We had a pilot project on the war room, and into the war room now we put investigations. So that's going into the war room. But last week we actually said to the war room, the first work they're going to do before they get into investigations or convictions, actually we only get 3% conviction when it comes to gangster-related crime. We've said, actually, while we've got all of this energy, we actually need to use the war room to have a look with our national counterparts at the parole system. And so the first work that the war room is doing now is going to be how we sit with the criminal justice system
terms of the department dealing with our request isn't evidence of systematic problems in that regard. May I continue with my
thank you for the
maybe pay for the we can encourage various departments to if I can jump into it, on the back of the clean audit, I remember you on the previous speaking about the value added and looking at changing how the audit will take place, especially in terms of if we look at some of the key pillars and some of that what is needed to see the value as in any developments in that regard. But then also I'm delighted then you have agreed that the Children's Commissioner will prioritize at least 8 million enough. Is that just for the setup of the office? Will that be enough or is that for the entire year? I should probably speak to social development to see how many staff will be in that office. But I'm keen to hear regarding the corporate communication on page.
Mr. Ellen, can we just quickly finalize the memorandum and follow up and then you can go page by page?
Thank you very much. I'm satisfied with the response from both the DG and the Premier. But I think the problem is will not be solved unless they have fiscal autonomy. You don't have fiscal autonomy. You are actually like a trainer tied to a car, where even the car goes to trainers. So if things go bad at national, it's going to go bad to us. But I want to ask you, you talked about revenue, and that is a big problem. You have the plans, all you need is a revenue, and I trust the Premier to carry it out, but he's a businessman, keen businessman, he knows the subjects. But there are problems in it now. Why do we keep on with this old thing about a person get a house now, his house, free of charge, even if he can't even pay for the water and electricity, get the house, and he becomes a further burden. Why don't you have rental stock so you have a revolving fund? You're getting in rent all the time, so to build new houses and to upgrade and the housing township. But we're going on with this plan, which was maybe in the days of Joe Slow, it was a good idea. But the Joe Slow era is past. We're in a Trump era. We've got to deregulate. We're going to have border control to make sure that the people that come in here, who have the funds to keep their houses, education, and the health services, we have no border control. We can't lower taxes because we don't have fiscal autonomy. So the taxes are high, there is no investment, and there's no job creation. So we can't even sell state land because there is land registered to the province, can be sold to generate revenue. And have we looked at it? Are we looking at that possibility? Then I'm just saying, if we come with this 3,000 cost, what is the contribution by municipalities towards that? And I also want to know the municipal extension of the police. To what extent, and sorry that I must ask this now, it wasn't part of my first question, are you going to save that phone? Or is it only in the metropolitan areas? Because it's very important for me to know whether this police force will also be there to safeguard farms in the rural areas. And then I want to say that if you can need people to be quarantined, the money that you budget is in anticipation of that becoming a possibility. I know we only have 7 now, and I know some of them we covered. I don't want us, Mr. Chair, to land in a situation that I remember the time when I was the MEC for health, and everybody said, we're scaring the people with HIV. Don't scare the people. Until 600,000 die in 1 year of AIDS. Then they blame President Mbeki for denial. I don't want to be in denial. I came here yesterday with a mask, not because it was funny,
but to focus attention, this can become a problem. And I believe in the saying, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. So that is my final question. Have you prepared for this? Will you have medication? Will you have patients of quarantine and have made provision for it? And what about deregulation? How far have we gone about deregulation? Also, another point, Mr. Premier, you will notice that the trucks, they destroy our roads. Those heavy trucks, you're talking about licenses, they used to carry the goods by train. Now they move from rail to road. And because they can overload and they can't overload by train, then they have to pay. So whether we must look at that, sir, whether we must stop them, they must be waived, or they must be discouraged from using our roads, because that destroys our road infrastructure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Member Philander. Do you have a point on the forward?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of rules on the ground, that you've done, but referring to the VIP, specifically to 105, it's an initiative that is not necessarily felt in areas outside of the metro. To understand the different platforms and forums, for instance, like the PCFs, how does that get monitored to make sure that areas outside of the metro municipalities also implement or ask for direction in terms of implementation?
Thank you. I don't want to say too much about the comments from the Honourable Marais. Besides, obviously this gets into more of a political policy type debate, but I mean, I agree with you absolutely, Roger. But I also can tell you, if you sit in the Transport Department's budget vote and ask them how many trucks they weigh every year, I mean, you cannot come into this province without going through a weighbridge. They get weighed, you just go and stand at Worcester and see how many trucks, go and stand in, on the N7 or in both West and see how many trucks are just pulled in. Every single truck that comes past gets pulled into those weighbridges. Because of exactly that problem, they damage our roads, and we need to get those trucks onto trains. Long debate on that. I also want to say that on your housing issue, I think also you can draw down into the human settlements budget vote, but in early February there was an Economist article on inner city and measuring cities around housing development, around what cities in the world got it right and what cities in the world got it wrong, as we are moving towards 80% of people in the world going to be living in cities in the next 20, 30 years. And we need to learn from this. Very, very good. Probably a 5 or 6 page article in The Economist that I've actually handed out to all of our cabinets, to all of the policy people. It's really worthwhile reading. That really starts to talk about some of the changes that we need to be making as a country, but also as a province and as municipalities. Your question on what contribution do the municipalities make? So in the case of the boots on the ground, we put in 1.2 billion for the first 1,000 and the municipalities put in 500 million for the first 1,000. So they definitely are contributing. We are engaging with the other municipalities as well. The main target or the main measurement is how do we halve the murder rate, and that's why the provincial government, actually all of this first money goes to basically the Cape Flats, because that's where the 10 hotspot murder areas are. And of course when we started the scans today, they actually changed. We measured the top 20, and that did change, but that's where the focus lies. But also we're having discussions on what happens because of Avian Park in Worcester or Chicago in Rockenstein, because we're seeing that what's happening, some of the gangsters is moving up into the rural areas, and how do we monitor and how do we make decisions on deployment? Because obviously this is provincial money, and these first 1,000 this year must are available to the province. And of course at the moment we're focusing in the city. get them to start with their safety plans and the discussion coming maybe to the second point about PCS. We have focused discussions at PCS with every single municipality and every single municipal manager. And we've had two now on safety. We'll have another one on safety coming up. We just had one on energy again, because these are the critical issues that are facing us in the province, but every single municipality. Can I also maybe, Chair, just I would like some guidance from this committee. So the province has now got its first coronavirus case. So it's just been announced. Now there's certain protocols that have to kick into that. So the honourable member asked, are we ready? We can go into that. Jock set up last week already. DG called top management on Monday. Five work streams. They all come back again in a big job on Friday. The national minister, so the reason I know is I've just got it from the national minister. National minister has to announce that happens on a day or as needed basis. They are having a meeting with the national minister tomorrow. Then on Friday we have our joint operations. We've already set up to call a cabinet meeting for Friday at 2 o'clock. Which the Joint Operations Command, the five teams will feed into. Already Tigerberg has got its quarantine area set up. 3,500 people have been tested already in this process. We have had screening at our airport. This last weekend was actually interesting, engaging with international visitors. Who were saying to me that they've travelled around the world, and in actual fact, at Pearl Chamber and Cape Town International, it seems to them to be the best prepared that they've been So we have got incredible systems in place, but I've asked for some guidance because obviously now that the ministers informed me that we have a case, I have to now go into the next stage of our protocols and probably have to go out to Tigerberg. So I need to ask this committee whether I could be excused, whether there's any questions that I could be asked, and ask if you could go to the reason, maybe just for the committee's information. Obviously this is going to have to be, but the minister has informed me we have a case, a 36-year-old male, a traveller who's been travelling to many countries, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Turkey, and arrived in South Africa, returned to Africa on the 9th of March, has gone through tests. Not in quarantine, but he's in, because of that, he can actually personally quarantine himself. But that's as I understand it as now, but obviously we now need to step into the protocol.
So I think from our side, we'll excuse you, and I know that the standing committee may help have a protocol that they will have to excavate and get a department of government and say, I'll come and explain to them so they can keep the city the way they can be informed. So from our side, unless it's a burning issue, I strongly suggest that we use the premium and continue with this problem. Member Duggan, you want to say?
Thanks, Chair. I'll support that. I think that if there are other direct questions, that the department is not able to deal with, we will just make a note of those and then hand them on to the premier or himself.
Yes, we'll do that. Premier, yes, please. Obviously, we wanted to put the necessary protocols in place.
Your hands are clean. Follow hygiene processes.
Are there any on that? We do that, Mark.
It's
true.
Whatever you want doesn't work.
Like, everyone else in this country.
Okay.
There is a certain special mask that works. But of course, if you sick, that mask works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most important thing. Three wash your hands. Don't talk into your hand and then don't shake.
Then we are. All right, continue without me. Okay, we can have a page. Actually, is there something they need to ask?
Chair, just on the one question that you wrote to London.
Yes, sorry, I'll just be on this question.
So I think that one is so outstanding. If you go to the P-Cook, members of the P-Cook, they're on page 151. You'll see that for safety implementation across the various districts, instead of half being allocated, it's 2.1 million per district. And then also in relation to safety initiatives, it's not just a district principal,
page 1 of the script.
Start from the beginning.
Just towards the end, and maybe this is also something that should be deferred to the Premier, but right at the end there's the services that are rendered, it's like coordination of external communication and public participation. Now, I think it would be very important for us to get, first of all, the policy of the Department of the Premier on public participation. And then also to indicate what are the plans for public participation in this financial year. I mean, the legislature, as you know, Chair, you know, has public participation that is obliged in regard to legislation when we deal with bills and so on. But I must be very frank, I'm battling to really understand when we say that there's a main service of the Department of the Premier coordinate public participation. I don't actually see any evidence of that. We know that the Premier has a forum with mayors and so on, but I'm not aware of any other formal public participation. And we ourselves raise a concern that when you go to Mitchell's Plain, you have a sofa, but you don't allow the Premier of Mitchell's Plain to actually participate, even at the leadership level. You know, then one begins to question whether that is just a publicity exercise because people would also watch it on TV. So I'd like to know what is the policy, the official policy on public on coordinating public participation, and then what are the actual plans in this financial year to in regard to public participation, about what issues, where, and how it's going to take place. I don't expect an answer, but if you so rule, Chair, that would be something that we get in writing.
You're welcome to let us in writing if you don't have an answer right now.
We can provide the detail in writing. Obviously, that part has been put in there as far as relates to, firstly, the role that we play within the legal service environment. As before, we introduced the bill into Parliament. I mean, that bill normally gets exercised by the department for the first round of comments, and then obviously once that comment comes in, then obviously the department will deal with it, and then go back to cabinet and back to Parliament, and we do exactly the same, you know, with major policy steps and policy intentions by the respective departments. The other area, Chair, that's what we started the sense of point that I made earlier, for the first time this year with the PSP, we actually put it out for public comment, public participation. We received comments internally, externally. I spoke about the comments that we received from the gender-based or from the gender commission, and we've dealt with that in an appropriate manner. But what I can maybe do is take, you know, the issue, maybe, you know, come back with a little bit more information to yourself. You know, but those are just two examples of where we actually engage with the broader public on kind of important documentation.
Thank you. In addition to that, could we just ask that if we could possibly then be given a note of the DG saying around the provincial strategic plan, but if in that response, could we just get a sense of what actually was done? You know, if it was put on the website, if it was advertised in the newspaper, you know, just what was the actual public participation strategy with the PSP? Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, then I'll go to the next one. Can you give a sense of now that the coronavirus is confirmed in the Western Cape, what is the disaster management plan for the staff, not for the people, the staff in the Western Cape? And here we're talking practically, for example, that people can't get to work. I know there is a national staffing policy, we all know there are 68 policies in place, but is there any special provisions made or consideration given if somebody who, for example, travels with government business, let's say, to go for rest, and the person now can't be at work for 3 days, 21 days. Is there any consideration given to that? And then, on page 6, when we talk about corporate assurance,
what are we doing to manage those risks? Because I think there is somewhere, obviously, I think it went from 31% to 35%, the number of published areas. You know, in, like in many poor communities, if the police is not there, people are likely to commit a crime. That's just part of the nation. So when we have less coverage area, I mean, what risks are given to those high-risk departments in managing some of those high-risk areas where we know that's likely for things to take place or for crimes to be committed? Members, any other questions from your side? Otherwise, I can give members anything else.
Thank you. Maybe I can link the question with regards to the output and the value base in terms of the auditing. It's called the page 3 because it's mentioned earlier. But on page 9, in terms of priority number 6, social cohesion and safe communities, earlier on you mentioned the practicality of actually looking up to the municipality level in order to see what role municipalities also play. Do we have had the scope of activity in terms of creating safe communities? Because if I look at it from a practical point of view, that would be an interesting example. What does that mean to the department when you ultimately say and how
thank you. But this is the one page back to page 5 under the provincial strategic management. The program that will be undergoing organization realignment, they've obviously know what's happening about it, or what was written about that. When will this take place and what are some of these realignments that the program takes? Because there he talks about the roles and responsibilities of both to respond to new realities and the program was established and the current structure that you make out of touch. In the same way, that what does it mean when it remains out of touch? Any other questions up to page 10 minutes? Remember that one?
Okay, just in page 2 and towards the top, there's the issue of the quality for the need of coordinate data and evidence as a strategic asset across and with university equity. Could you just give a sense of what are the strategies and the current programs in regard to that issue being a coordinated data? I think the Premier mentioned one of our officials who's looking at the geographical information system and so on. You know, the point that I raised earlier about how does one map, if there are 10 areas most affected by crime, how does one actually gather the data about all the interventions that have been made in that specific area in regard to even what the community is facing, what the local sphere and so on. And then the other issue I think has been dealt with in the provincial constitution, Premier gave a response to the issue of the environment. And so I just would like to note, Chair, if we do come, when we do come to resolutions, the request of a timeline from the Department of the Premier as to how we're going to deal with the, because as I heard the Premier, and I'm referring to the issue of the provincial constitution on page 2, that he did indicate that we need to resolve the matter. I think it's just important to get a sense of the time frame. Then on page 4, just under the Centre for E-Innovation, I just had a report the other day from the constituency that I'm serving in Mossel Bay, where there was a team, you know, actually in Mossel Bay that was busy installing the infrastructure. And then the comment that was made was that there were no, and I'm not saying this is true, but maybe you could use that record, it could be true, that the person said that there were no local people involved in the actual construction of the caving that was being made to the school or whatever it was. So I would just like to, in principle, obviously you have contractors that go out and do it. Are these provincial contractors, and is there any obligation on them to employ local people in the process of laying the cable? And then just in regard to corporate assurance at the bottom of in regard to when the Hawks are also involved in an investigation. I mean, my understanding would be that there needs to be a separation between an investigation that the Hawks are doing and, you know, the work that Corporate Assurance through its forensic might be doing in a certain department or a certain municipality. And there's always a fine line, I would argue, between those investigations. So I would just like to ask, are there any situations in which the Corporate Assurance through the forensic unit have actually assisted the Hawks? That's a very specific question that I would like to ask.
Are you talking in a department or in a municipality?
No, no, this department, as I understand it, which is located in the Department of the Premier, is sometimes asked to assist with investigations in municipalities as well.
I don't understand, but they can answer that.
That's why I'm just
looking for it.
And then I would like to ask if in those investigations, and I'm citing the George example, because as you may or may not know, there's like internal investigations, the Hawks are busy with investigations. So when the Hawks are investigating something in the same area that this department is investigating, what is the protocol between the Hawks and the provincial government given the separation of powers? And then are you going up to page 10, Jim? That's my last one, up to page 10.
Okay.
You go up to page 10, yeah?
No, I'm saying.
Are you done? Okay.
Okay. Is it in this one?
Chair, I'm going to ask the respective government managers to come in. So then they will deal with the issues around corporate assurance, particularly the issue around the investigations. Then I'm going to ask that Michael to speak to what are some of our initiatives in relation to the role of the Andre can also add, and then Zenith, if you can just on a high level, talk about the strategies in relation to greater governance, and then Marshall just touch on some of the institutional issues in your program. And then I just want to talk about the issue around the border value base. And then also in relation to page 9, that deals with obviously Sahara to be here number 6. And maybe before I get there, I just need to say that on Monday, in relation to this whole issue around the coronavirus, I've called all the heads of departments together to talk about what is our plan of readiness, and in fact, what is it that we should be doing and not doing. And at that meeting, we have agreed on 5 work streams, stuff that deals with the economy, stuff that deals with staff, and then obviously what is it that we need to do as an institution when it comes to our staff. So what we've more is agreed to is that Michael is the head of the CSC HR component. He's currently looking at our own policies and regulations, but obviously there's the issue around leave, discretion leave, leave in the case of emergency, etc. But we've encouraged HRDs, I think, from a traveling perspective to limit traveling of staff members internationally, particularly to the countries that's most affected. In fact, Chair, we've actually withdrawn 2 of our staff members after they visited Italy during the first week, which is before the place got locked down. So as an institution, we're trying to be out the communication to ask who's traveling, even if it's privately, and to actually requesting to the South Philippines or something there when they come back and need to go for the necessary test. So I do not anticipate, Chair, that we could have any major challenges in relation to our policies. I mean, this is a national, international potential disaster, and we will deal with it, you know, in accordance to our own policies. I must also state that the Department of Public Service and Administration is also looking at the matter. In fact, we came up with a last discussion as DGs, and obviously there needs to become guidance from national so that we ensure that we deal with this thing consistently, and also make sure that, you know, that there are no kind of people when it's time to take chances to stay at home or not. Hilton, who heads up our CI branch, from my perspective, have also already started to look at policies for allowing people actually to work from home in terms of the remote access, land access assistance, etc. So, Region, and Chair, I hope that I can respond to what you have to do. As Peter said, on Friday, we will all go to the disaster center. In fact, the Department of Local Government Disaster Management Center is actually managing this issue from a disaster management perspective, but obviously our provincial health department leading it from a clinical perspective. So on Monday after the PGM, we are meeting again in the disaster center. Previous training announced on Friday, the entire PGM together with cabinet will go to the disaster center to talk about our plan of action. The entire province will ensure that there's a consistent message into the province, into the provincial government space, that our staff also knows what is happening. And obviously lastly, Chair, we also have created a link on our website, the Pfizer Thrive Center, and we did that communication. So we continue to send messages out to staff in relation to how to deal with it. So if you go to www.westernfed.com/coronavirus, that's the link. You will find videos there, you will find communication there that we've distributed in hospitals, and it's about, you know, proper hygiene and what is it that you need to do if you potentially and contract or if you suspect that, you know, you may have it. And that's really what we're trying to do from an institutional perspective. So, Andre, you might just want to touch maybe yourself and Michael just around the stock if you want to, and then in there maybe deal with your stock. But before we get there, on the audit issue that was raised last year by the Premier, we have already started a process that we had a discussion with the Auditor General last week and Monday. And what we've asked the Auditor General is to think about how do we maintain the high levels of governance, which is now for the entire country, but simultaneously start to think about, you know, more efficient ways, more innovative ways of still providing the necessary external assurance, but we try and do it in a more efficient way. So we were also quite clear with the AG, it's also an area that we explore, so we're really in the explorative space at the moment, and where we actually share these practices that potentially happening across the world. I mean, the AG has got a strict mandate. We've assured them once again that we actually, you know, we follow what they do. We respect the mandate because they're an independent institution, and in no way do we want to detect them what it is that they need to do. But we're asking them to start to think about, you know, what is happening in this space internationally. Understand process at the moment, and with the Auditor General, I have committed to think about it and start, and to see if the ways they come into the national office, and then to start to think of the call. And then Michael is in the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Of the family. key point also is obviously if you feel that you might have the symptoms, that's also what we encourage people to do, to actually go and see the medical practitioner, because that's the first step that you need to do. Or alternatively, you can call the emergency hotline. That's also sort of on our website. I mean, we all know it. It's at 0800 number, 029999. And that's effectively the message that we need to send to the entire Western Cape government. And that is why we put it onto a corporate website. Okay.
So, Jason, I'm going to respond to the daunting declarations and where we feel assisted. So, for the past 18 months, we haven't done any work in the Department of Local Government, as we have to get up in the city to deal with any declarations in the municipality, so we are not doing any declarations there. And then, obviously, we do that, a relationship with all, whether it's not the same, it's the same as with any party in the criminal justice system. But we do separate that they don't help with investigations, they provide information, they provide access to some of the documentation that we keep if we do an investigation. I'm just talking generally speaking. And obviously we do research and we do assist, it helps sometimes to set up treaties and to get in contact with people, but so it's a professional relationship, not a on the managing the risks of the post-incorporate infiltrations, I think I must start off by saying that I'm not the only human in the department that's facing this. It's like every single unit are not having all the buses sold. But not to make it, to make light of it, I do think the two units that are most affected by in the branch is internal audit and forensic specifically. So internal audit, as I have communicated to you in the past, following a process of command assurance planning, so they will evaluate the risks that are in the departments, but in the context of where other assurance is being provided, and they will compile a plan with that in mind. Chair, I will not, there are gaps, so there are instances where not all the risks that don't receive sufficient coverage in the broad assurance framework are not covered. However, there is also a process where it gets into on a regular basis, so as risks are escalating, it is important that our means are covered in some areas in fact and also cover that. So I think it's a continuous process, every quarter that they look at that. So I think also as Chidi has said, we have challenged our teams to start to look at the work that has been differently, the assurance that are providing in the context of citizen centricity and focusing on areas where citizens can experience improvement in service delivery. Notwithstanding the fact that we do need to look at some internal processes as well. Then she, as it relates to provincial forensic services, they do experience some investigation times. I think that's a natural outcome of the process we have done at first. And I do think we are again trying to also, in the past there wasn't a real forum, if I can call it that, or exposure to having anti-corruption sessions with the public, and they are this year putting their foot into that to start to communicate with the public and say, how do you report matters after that you do initiate the process here, the public actually knows what you're doing about anti-corruption. So yeah, obviously we'll place more pressure on them, but that's part of the process of controlling the criticality of the public.
Hilton, can you just respond to the issue that's on the backlog on the facility in the supply?
Thank you. In the backlog, the Nico Telecom is on call to 15% of the economic development funds in Trinidad. In the contract, however, they use contractors to do the fencing in those areas. And those contractors, the Nico Telecom is not directly in control of who they source it, but the for doing fencing is really low level of skill that they require. They will most probably use
some of the areas where the relevant responsibilities have evolved over recent years, particularly with regard to expanding institutional mandate coming from nationally from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So it is in the areas of the department taking up the role of coordinating strategic planning across the regions of government and then also monitoring and evaluation, and also on driving the program of frontline support and monitoring. So that's one of the areas. One of the other areas where the roles and responsibilities have evolved, and my colleague will also speak to it in response to the second question, is where we have also moved the problems from the traditional results-based MNE processes to expanding into provincial wide data governance, and that is the program that we are driving, how we use our data as a more strategic asset, and I think Zenith will speak to that in the next question. So linked to that, there's been an increased demand for services, particularly from our team that works with integrated environment, and that is also one of the areas where we're looking at more integrated ways of working. So some of the realignment, I think the DJ has also really spoken to, that this particular branch is focusing on, and that is a much stronger focus on driving and supporting departments with the implementation of the provincial strategic plan, as well as focusing much stronger on leveraging our data and evidence, and that's the strategy that I referred to in terms of our province-wide data governance program, and then also taking elevating the strategic approach of international relations that we've also spoken to earlier, and that's also one of the realignments, and then just generally dealing with the institutionalization of transversal strategic programs across regional government, particularly those in relation to human rights and wealth, as well as gender responsiveness. So those are some of the areas that we'll be focused on in the environment.
Good morning. I will respond to the question on media and COVID-19 energy and strategic assets across the Zimbabwe central government. Zimbabwe central government, we have started the journey in terms of how we actually have utilized our performance, starting off with our performance data, how we actually proceed with our performance data so that it is more value added in terms of making decisions and how quickly we actually do our policy planning and data integration. So I think that we have a very strategy, strategic framework of province-wide data governance, and it is to leverage data and evidence for ultimately so it is integral to the PSP implementation plan. And very important it is to strengthen so that we can start in our policy and decision making chain. But underneath that, it is very much about how we're using our data and technology actually better, and how we actually have key drivers within this province to ultimately improve the production and use of data so that it's more quality data, it's much evidence that works for us, and evidence that we can use at the end of a 5-year cycle and say we have it approved and we can make better decisions and we can actually say that we have positive contribution to societal change. Because ultimately what one wants to do through a PSP implementation cycle is implemented, you want to constantly, consistently and to improve the quality of the data so that you can actually say you have set your outreach and intervention to cater to societal needs. So good basically a software approach with key stakeholders to drive the vision in data production needs across the department, and so that we can harmonize our services. And then finally, it is ultimately why we want to use as a strategic asset, so that we can have a different distinctive decision-making approach. So our decision that we made in terms of how we implement the PSP is taking the interest of the citizen into account. And then ultimately, we will encapsulate into a data evidence framework. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have one question, and then that will be Mr. Murray. I can't remember who responded. I think it was Mr. Michael who responded. I just want to check if my understanding now. that I'm trying to find a vaccine or anyway, some kind of treatment for the virus. And the first thought that comes to mind, I mean, is, you know, what would the, you know, are there any broad rough estimates about what such a vaccine would cost? And you know, how would that be funded generally in the context of WHO policies? And is a global epidemic, et cetera, you know, where does the funding come from that area? Is there any thinking or information about that? And then, Chair, I just also want to thank the proposal to just do, to get a report on the contractors in Mossel Bay. It would be very useful just to understand, and understand the explanation. My concern would be that if, say, they were working in Mossel Bay, whether it's from Auckland or Kununalu, for the examples, whether in fact there were some people being recruited, or in fact whether people come from Cape Town or how or something. And it would just be interesting to use that as an example to see whether the contracts employed by Liquid Telecom are taking that seriously. And then just on the data issue, I wanted to ask whether, in terms of tracking infrastructure spending, where we are spending infrastructure particularly, whether the data that we're trying to develop is, for instance, do we at this point in time have the ability to track infrastructure spending per project, per month, per ward? Is that what we're trying to do, you know, or we're working towards that, or we can be doing it at the moment, that we're actually able to track the infrastructure spending at a ward level and actually list the amounts that would be spent there from different departments? Okay.
We have a problem here, a huge problem. You're looking for funds, you're looking for cash. You're supplying a lot of the money we get, a conditional grant. It's a green phase, so you can't really work much. We have a shortage of medication at our day hospitals at the moment. I have many, and I will say it in the minister's budget, how many cases I've got of people who go because they have high blood pressure, but there's no chronic medication. Diabetes, no medication. Now, if you don't have money to buy chronic medication in hospitals, are you looking for money for vaccines for the coronavirus, and you don't even know how big this is going to be? What is your plan B or C in this regard? Are you saying we might even take from that money, which is for chronic medication, to fight the coronavirus? Or is it a separate budget for it? Or might it come from the same budget which you now have for health to fight corona, which is a totally separate issue? You need ring-fenced money just to fight the coronavirus. You can't use it from your health budget because you're really running short. At their hospitals and at Kuwaiti and at Conradi on medication. You can't even treat diabetes at the hospitals. We have a long list for people waiting to receive a treatment. So I would just like to know, how do you bring this together? Are you saying that this kitty you've got now, you have to subdivide it to accommodate whatever else comes your way, which you don't know the extent of it? Why say you are going to now already ask government to give you a conditional grant just for that, for the coronavirus, which we might be facing? I haven't got any plans in that view, plans in that view.
Remember, I think we need to better focus that on the appropriate department. Are they welcome to respond to the information that they know? But I just wanted to ask you, sorry, just on my follow-up question about your disaster plan. Within your PTM meetings, obviously there are a lot of government departments, and from the 1st of April, they will provide funding and get sports days and community days and all the several other public-facing engagement over the next few months. Have they consideration for now to put it to stop while you have the discussion being to continue with those public events. Thank you. Including training at your provincial training institute, because a lot of governments have to go to those sort of places. And what is the discussion in your part of your awareness strategy to provide and standardize for those facilities also? Thank you.
In terms of work, I mean, we have made a decision at least to provide each staff member for now with this hand sanitizer. I think that's stock. And obviously, in areas where you know, our staff interface with the public, you know, I mean, that's now the next step to see what we can do in that space. So, yeah, I think generally in relation to public events as well as the work we do as a provider, I mean, the decision has not been taken to stop any of those things. Okay, because, I mean, also the consent here is panic into the system. And as I said earlier, if anybody has got any symptoms or you feel that you don't feel okay, is to consult your medical practitioner. That's the first. And then obviously, you have to call the helpline number, which is a national number. And then, you know, if there's anything that's confirmed, then obviously the disaster plan. Per each department will then actually keep it. So no public events, nothing has been cancelled. It is, and I think the previous spoke earlier around his own experiences recently at the Cape Coast. Member Valer, what I think will happen practically, okay, particularly from a fiscal perspective, listening to the Department of Health, the coronavirus is just one of many viruses. So if this becomes a national pandemic or a national disaster, there are processes that will kick in relation to national disaster legislation that's actually in place. I mean, the National Minister of Health is the champion for this thing on the national level. And I'm sure, you know, in relation to the legislation coming, national disasters, that process as part of its natural course will actually be activated. So annually, nationally, in the national budget, X amount of money is set aside to deal with disasters, and obviously provinces can make application to excess sum of funding to deal with this matter. Our own Department of Health, I mean, they've given the commitment that they are ready, they've executed all the necessary clinical processes to deal with it, and I think if the committee want to have any further information on this, it's probably best for in the Department of Health. Also, I think linking to the question that Member Dartmoor raised around information on the vaccine and stuff like that, I think we will be on very dangerous territory, you know, to express ourselves on medical issues. I mean, that's not our speciality, but I know the money stuff, but I know that the Department of Health, they are on top of the game in relation to this thing, and they work hand in hand with the disaster center and in the province. I mean, the premier has already taken the lead, you know, on this thing to actually speak on the matter, and obviously assisted by the minister, provincial minister of health, as well as obviously Minister Burdell, who is responsible for disaster management in the province. In relation to infrastructure spending, the question has been raised by our member Dartmoor. As part of this whole initiative that the President has put up, the one that deals with the district development model, I'm sure Mr. Tuck was aware of that, the idea is actually to know exactly where we spend our money from the infrastructure perspective. So it's really to know the exact location in which board and which department or which municipality is sending the model. The provincial president has published the OPRI, as they call it, that's the overview of provincial infrastructure expenditure. So if one goes into that detail, you will be able to see exactly how the infrastructure budget is made up, per municipality, where exactly it is, in which ward it is per municipality, and I know there's a big chunk that I think they term it across the various wards. But if one goes into detail, we'll be able to see exactly where the close to 50 billion is to be spent over the next 3 years. That work will be strengthened by the work that Zenith is doing in
one goes one way down, you'd actually be able to see, particularly those infrastructure, where exactly it's been spent by which department. And understandably, some of the stuff runs across boards, because when you build a road, sometimes that road would run even across municipal district areas. If you step maybe in Stellenbosch or some of these regional roads, they run across various regions, they run across various areas. But that information is very good. So I think that takes care of all the issues as well as the of questions that you
thank you. Colleagues, we're going to take a 10-minute break. 10 minutes. We need to stay in the time that we still have a long way to go. Otherwise, we'll come back this afternoon after this 2 o'clock meeting, which is after 5 or 6. So if you can manage to keep the questions, two questions and our statement, and then also the answers.
Do you want to hand over to finish this meeting by almost the end? If you change the operators,
one point six. 6 billion is going to the metro, then you would think that if the remaining 40 is going to be spread around to all the districts, but then it just says Cape Wine and then it specifically says Stellenbosch. So I just want to understand what's going on there.
If you can just add mine and you know, go. Have you had a research question?
I thought it covered with a question from Mendes Dadlo with regard to the cultural change and what we're doing in terms of culture, but I want to look at to page from 17 to page 34, which deals with corporate communication. In terms of the 16 million, what amount would be spent on the external service provider and the external service provider here? The appointed already, as per 17, in order to do, to deliver, to conduct the research and the assessment by the internal council chairman, because against the backdrop of many other organizations or institutions, obviously we need a council chairman, how people feel about the band, etc., how they feel about that. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'd like to go to page 20. This one with 5 million rand for Westfield, can you just share with us what is it for? I'd like to look for you the annual performance plan that I want to look here. And then on, if one would go on page 25, there's also to link to Mendes Dadlo's question, page 28, but I think it's pretty good answer. The 13 million for the provincial data governance, the 5 million innovation for impact activities, and the 8 million rand for the innovative methodology to solve complex problems. If you can just get some clarity on that. And then the youth in service on page 28, those 300,000 rand for the outer years, 2021-22, is that linked to the previous advancement of youth program or is it a separate program on its own? And then page 31, the Microsoft data on foreign exchange payment being. If you can tell when this budget was done, so because the rand has obviously deteriorated in the last 2 days, and it's not likely to get worse going forward. But this will impact on your budget was going forward, because that presumably is a specific rand dollar amount. Hey, do you guys do any performance plan yet? No, I'm not there yet. Go ahead.
I think the issue on page 19 around the e-learning, the question that you part of the spot, but that was provided in response in relation to that. But that more or less the intensity of the question. And also, another point that somebody said, we've got a current contract, and obviously we will go off. Then, Chair, the 500 on the Westo, that is, that's dealt with on page, I think you were on page 25. So it's also the issue that Minister Mania mentioned in his speech, so to deal with issues of exploring or looking at funds through the CFA process and effectively take the pilot to the next step in the three key focus areas, being mobility, issue of safety, more particularly, and obviously issue of infrastructure. So that's the three areas that we're going to explore. And in that also they will draw internal capacity in the department of human to try and mainstream the approach. And that deals with your question on page 20. And then Chair, what we can do in relation to your question on page 25 deals with the provincial line of the governance, innovation for impact initiative, innovative methodologies to solve complex problems, that's 5 minutes that I've spoken by. On those two areas, we can give you a written input because we have put a written input already together that forms part of our provincial strategic plan in relation to the provincial wide data governance that Gina spoke about, and then obviously the innovation for impact initiatives. And in fact, the innovation for impact initiative runs across a couple of programs. So it's program two, it's program three, more particularly, and also program 5 for SNAP and some of those, so we can provide an input into that. And then on page 28, the youth in service, Michael, I mean on that is definitely linked to the advancement of the youth program, so the running. And you can see here in the middle of the last year, so adding 300,000 to actually take it to the next level. And in fact that's one area where we've got lots of success stories. Many of the kids that came in either got employment or they actually went on to go study further. So there's a substantial amount of them that actually explored some further sites. Then, in relation to page 51, obviously, if there's any issue that relates to the RAND dollar exchange, the feedback on the payments to the Microsoft licenses, if there's any issue here, we will take that up with the Treasury as part of the adjustment process, given the fact that this allocation was made on and the other portion of the allocation relates to the ruling by the South African Revenue Services that we now need to pay VAT, but potentially have made the necessary adjustment and they have provided the money to this one to pay. They don't need cash out of my hand, it's just a cash agreement that's been made. And then I think on your last question, Chair, in relation to what is the future we're going to do differently, particularly in relation to innovation and culture, we can also do that in a documented response to yourself. So I've got about 6 issues, Chair, on my list that we need to respond. And then in the early part of today, you can also ask two written responses. The one was just to clarify the process that we use to communicate the PSC that we will need to do in writing, and then also detail on the contractors that did the work within the Washington area. So that's all is my okay, and that's how I'm going to deal with this.
That's fine. If you just add one issue, Professor Gorba, on page 34, the provincial forensic service, because they are also on the end of the performance plan, obviously they are, and I mean, this is what they're saying, the current capacity is insufficient. And that also comes to the other plan I asked about earlier on, because right now there might be a problem, but like I said, the police aren't watching you. People are likely to commit a crime. I mean, these two units are clearly underfunded and they have insufficient staffing areas. A year from now, we're going to sit in all the committee meetings and tell us the reasons why we did this. But these are things one could have foreseen a year in advance. So I just want to know, what are the plans? You can just share with us what are the plans, so a year from now, we're going to be sitting with more crime people.